Good afternoon, Namibia, and a warm welcome to On the Radar News Analysis right here on Eagle FM. I'm your staffer, Happy Juju, and I'm here to keep you company up until 14:30. Now, of course, today is Tuesday, the 30th of September, 2025, and of course, the last day of the month, which for many Namibians means payday and the familiar month-end hustle. Now, whether you're collecting your salary, paying bills, stocking up on essential, or just planning ahead, we're glad you've chosen to spend this moment with us. Now, right here on the Radar News Analysis, we go beyond the headlines. When we just tell you what's happening, we explore why it matters, how it affects everyday Namibians, and what it means for our communities and our economy. Now, from major policy decisions to the small details of daily life, we unpack the forces shaping our nation and bringing in the voices that matter most. And remember, your voice is just as important as the news itself. So make sure that you do share your thoughts with us on Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn and WhatsApp, or connect to us via Eagle FM website and Eagle FM app. Now, from the bustling streets of Windhoek to the farmlands of Grootfontein, from the shores of Walvis Bay to the quiet corners of Tsumeb, wherever you are this afternoon, we're glad to have you with us. This is On the Radar News Analysis. Namibia's stories unpacked and connected to the people who live them. And now, let's take a closer look at today's top stories. As September wraps up, Namibians are feeling the familiar push and pull of month-end. For many households, payday brings both relief and pressure. Salaries hit the bank, but so do bills, rent, school fees, and debt repayments. Shops and supermarkets see a surge in activity as families restock essentials, while others are stretching every dollar until the next pay cycle. Now, rising living costs mean that end consumer is constantly balancing priorities, deciding what to spend on immediately and what to hold off. So today, we'll unpack how Namibians are keeping up, where they are cutting back, and what this tells us about the state of our economy and household reliance. And of course, to help break this down further, I'm joined by consumer analyst Salomo Ipinge. Very good afternoon to you, Salomo Ipinge, and welcome to On the Radar News Analysis.
Very good afternoon to you, Happy, and thank you for having me. Good afternoon to your listeners as well.
Now, of course, Salomo Ipinge, it is month in the 30th of September 2025, and it's a cycle that has become so very common to ordinary Namibians with a habit of getting paid and not so soon afterwards, a couple of few days, and for some it takes a few weeks, the salary is done, and of course the cycle continues. Just what do you say about a month end for many Namibians?
Yeah, Happy, and thank you very much for having inviting me to share some insights in this topic. Mm-hmm. I think it's something that we as Namibia should take very seriously and not lightly, even to a point where legislations and laws also needs to be amended to be able to adequately protect the consumer from all these financial sharks that are out there. And we do understand that the financial sector is a very complex sector on its own, mm-hmm. and very difficult to understand by a normal individual in that regard. So it's a very complex topic, and I think really what causes the main cause of having consumers having salaries that actually maybe depletes on the same day that they get paid is because of over indebtedness, where consumers are either lending irresponsibly and the lenders are granting loans irresponsibly. So those are factors that we have to understand, because if a person finds themselves in a situation where they are over indebted, then it's a dire situation, because it affects the whole being of that individual. Their health is affected, their relationships at home, family, at work, all of those get affected. So it's quite a very serious factor that we have to really look into seriously as consumers individually, and the government. We also require the government involvement in. But on a personal capacity or on a personal note, as an advice to consumers is to say that, okay, we are in September, ladies and gentlemen, let's think proactively, let's think futuristically. We are facing a season of the festive season now. It's coming up in the next 3 months, December. This is the time that we need to prepare ourselves where perhaps, you know, start already buying some extra goods that you may need to use over the holiday so that you are able to buy them at a cheaper price now, because the demand then is higher and things are more expensive. So these are some of the things that we can to take into consideration and mitigate our finances as we approach the festive season.
And you rightly speak about the festive season that we are going to approach. And not to forget, right after the festive season, school holidays are going to be over and school is going to be resuming. So let's touch on that topic. What do you think about, of course, there's always the January rush that most majority of the parents always do. And it comes with a lot of stress as well. So maybe while we are in September early on, you know, sometimes we do like to advise the people when it's already December and then they can't really do much about it. Maybe while we are still in September, Salamo Ipinge, as a consumer analyst, what is it that you would tell the parents now, regardless of the everyday expenses that we're still experiencing in terms of preparing prior to the school reopening in January?
Hence, I'm very super excited to have you actually come up with this topic now, while it's early, where we are able to give an opportunity for people to make informed financial decisions. And again, like I mentioned earlier on, at least this is a season whereby it's a bit more calmer, like, you know, there's no rush going on. And this is the season and opportunity where you can actually use, where you can do your shopping calmly, prepare your school goodies, uniforms and stationaries and stuff. This is the time that you use the opportunity to purchase these and buy some of the few things in bulk as well in preparation for the festive season in December. And again, also setting some money aside because now you have an opportunity to do so. But let 2025, the year of 2025 end on a strong note where we are well prepared financially, that we start off a brilliant 2026, where you actually have an opportunity to start off from the year saving rather than being a few steps behind as far as your finances is concerned.
I want us to highlight on that particular aspect that you spoke about, buying in bulk. I think a lot of people also tend to overlook this one, but don't see actually how very important and how very helpful it is. Myself, I've actually incorporated this in my own shopping list, you know, in the way I'll stock up on, let's say, 5 kg macaroni because it's on sale. The price being generally $153 something dollars there, and then when it comes on sale, it's about at $124. You see how much I'll actually be saving. So then I'll buy two of those, and then the following month when I go shopping, I wouldn't need to buy macaroni. Just touch on that again, just to maybe let it sink into a lot of buyers or consumers, in actually for them it helping, you know, to curb on some of the expenses that they have to do at every month end.
I'm literally having goosebumps because you have actually nailed it on point, and I like the fact that you actually have put this into practice. And it's a very, very helpful tool. When you go do your shopping, there are certain items that you might find at a lower price than usual, and you bargain on those, and that's where you bulk up on those ones, grabbing the opportunity so that the following month you don't necessarily have to do a whole shopping that you were supposed to be doing, but you simply do supplement. You just supplement on what you have. You just add additional, and what you have left is something that you can set aside and save, which means that your life is just progressively going. Your financial stand is just progressively growing and becoming better.
Absolutely. Now, Salomo, are you seeing a shift in how people spend at month end compared to a few years ago? For example, I mean, cutting back on luxuries and prioritizing essentials, or perhaps even delaying purchases?
Look, there is a will, and where there is a will, there is a way. Ideally, and I can sympathize with a consumer because one thing that I have observed and know for sure is that we really lack financial literacy and financial education in our educational systems, even in our tertiary educational systems. There is no really, really evident financial literacy that an individual can be inducted into before going to participate in the economy, in the employment world, and so forth. And usually the consumer is, how do I call it? They are kind of the prey for all the service providers, from the financial aspect, even goods and stuff like that. I have observed that there is a hunger for consumer literacy, and the little that we are doing right now here, showing a concern in that area. And using this mode of communication and education, which really reaches into the vast, is already a seed of financial literacy that can help people make sound financial decision and also create new habits. Mm-hmm. I have observed that there is a will, is the lack of the tools and financial.
Hold on for me, Salom. It's just a commercial break. So sorry.
Sure.
Okay.
Save big at YouSave. 4 kilos real good frozen mixed chicken portions, just $189.99, 4 packets Knorr thickening soup, all variants, $24, 700 milliliters crystal gold tomato sauce, $24.99, 750 grams Nola mayonnaise, a bagan at just $27.99, 500 grams Romy 37% fat spread, $14.99, and 3 kilo bag selected pasta polana, $74.99. You save as good as the best for less.
Okay, Salamohe, I guess so, sorry. We're back now.
Thank you.
Now, with rising prices in food and fuel and, of course, other utilities, how do you think are ordinary households adjusting? Are people becoming more resourceful, or are they simply just struggling to keep up? Of course, we did speak about people having to make really good financial choices. But then again, you get those households, and a lot of them actually, who are just struggling to keep up. What advice or what information would you send out to those ones?
This is something very major in the economy, and sometimes we cannot see it with our physical eyes. The hiking of prices is always correlating to, the demand. The more the demand there is, the higher the price will go up. Mm-hmm. As a people and as a nation, we need to understand how to make purchase choices. For example, if you need some veggies at home, your tomatoes, your onions, your potato, your cabbages and stuff like that, do not buy these at the supermarket or at the pick and pay or whatever they call them. Go buy at the local vendors, because these are things that are grown locally, and they are supporting our local people, and we are creating, it's job creation, but it also curb on the prices, because the lower the demand is at the supermarket level, the lower they would drop their prices.
You're making a very good point right there. I do remember one time I actually had a guest right in studio on Life Lessons Saturday show, and this particular person said how
$500 goes a long way when you're buying from the street vendors. You know, you can get four apples for $10, get four oranges for $10, onions mixed with tomatoes and green pepper for $15. No, that's not the price that you get it in the supermarket, you know, and I think sometimes we maybe, tend to overlook that. Of course, you do get some street vendors where their, vegetables and fruits are not so fresh. So then I would say, those ones, I personally would keep away from those ones because I don't want to buy tomatoes that within a, 2 days, they are really, already going bad.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. But you still find vendors that really, really, sell their fresh product on a daily basis. But not only that, let us also grow into a habit of just growing your own, vegetable garden at home. It spares you money. Such activities. I mean, we've got a lot of land. And some of these things really, really just help us save a lot of money, but also curbing the competition in the industry in terms of hiking of prices and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. Now, Salomo, before I do let you go, just a word of caution, I guess, as the festive season is approaching, of course, it's also wedding season about to approach, and a lot of people, you will find that they have been made perhaps bridesmaids or groomsmen by a lot of people, and they're finding it very difficult to say no, and hence why they end up indebting themselves. So just maybe a word of caution to us out here as the consumers on being careful with our financial spending.
Yeah, and again, it's absolutely the right timing of speaking about this. Just one more last chance, because I don't think we would have, as a consumer, you will have another chance, plan properly, and do not wait for things to pile up or things to, for the last minute. Try and ensure that, you know, you are doing things or paying your obligations or responsibilities on a monthly basis, where, you know, you cover some money for whatever event it is. There are a lot of weddings that are coming up and stuff, but plan now, you know, take things chunk by chunk so that you don't find yourself in a position where you are pushed to go take out a loan that you are going to spend the rest of the next 5 years for you to pay. And also, I would urge, by no means should anyone consider taking out a loan, a personal loan or an unsecured loan. Mm. I will urge, unless it is for a purpose where you know it's going to create you an income that is able to satisfy that loan repayment at one go. Debt again is one of the major problems in our country. And I just urge, even as we go towards the end of the year, if you are indebted, try by all means to try and get yourself out of the cycle of this debt situation so that come 2026, you are starting off a year strong and fresh.
Absolutely. I appreciate that so much, Salomo Ipinge, as you always talk to the consumer people, for them to obviously make better financial choices. And of course, I do trust and believe that one or two people will take those into consideration and make better financial choices. So thank you so much for always making time for us right here on the Reading News Analysis.
Thank you so much for having me.
Sure.
Bye for now.
Okay.
And of course, there you had it from consumer analyst Salomo Ipinge. I decided to bring in this particular aspect and for us to discuss it. Why? Because it's month end, and of course, a lot of Namibians juggling of their finances. It's not exactly at the level where perhaps they want it to be, but at least maybe some sort of counseling, some sort of advice or encouragement will go a long way, and a very good reminder for us to start saving for the very early year of January so that we avoid that January rush and, you know, that January stress when you have to join long queues to buy stationery for your kids and buy school uniform, rather to actually start now. Not necessarily that you should put away so much money to go shopping once in order to cover the children's school fees or perhaps educational utilities. utilities that are going to be needed, but rather just taking off small by small. Perhaps if you have, for instance, two kids, you could buy one child's school uniform small by small this time and buy the other ones just like that. And before you know it, you'll be surprised that you actually come a long way. So the aim is to avoid that January rush. And of course, as December is coming, I think this advice is really just on the prominent and very important and critical at this particular time, because it's at this time that you really have control over how you prepare for December. With that being said, let's pause right here and take a trip to the marketplace. This is On The Reader News Analysis. 083-288-401 is the number in studio should you want to share opinions and contributions, perhaps ask questions. I'll see you after the commercial break.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura. And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before. Mm. It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past. Mm. And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Lipurane ngeno wapubwa eva tere ulikoni maundu tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweku tite opoye ekukulile. Oshafa fana nongeshe faili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshuan. Onongeshe fa ya pumbo kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi tota njuka. Okupitira oipindi konu konda doi inawa. Nune uto otukwetira o special ange sashake ngeshe fa omarudi tayo loka. Opone ushe ndife nawa nokumona oi jamwiri nawa. Ninge pata fanona Monica ko Eagle FM. Onora etatimwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali. Ileko derewa, hora hetatu natu, bali o hetatu watatu, o mafelane, Eagle FM, the eye.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura. And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before. Mm. It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past. Mm. And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back. Now for other news, the Ministry of Education, Arts, Sports and Culture, Arts, Sports, Innovation and Youth in collaboration with UNICEF and UNESCO is conducting a nationwide consultations on the Teaching Profession Bill and its regulations. Now the consultations aim to engage education stakeholders, including teachers, learners, parents and the wider public to provide input on this key legislative framework, which seeks to professionalize and strengthen the teaching profession in Namibia. Participants in the consultations include institutions of higher learning, civil society organizations, traditional authorities, NANTU, TAN, NANSO, school principals, heads of departments, teachers, education officials, and regional management representatives, among others. Now, let's take a listen to Loida Shanika, who is the Secretary General of the Namibia National Teachers Union, also known as NANTU, who has urged teachers to avoid instructing subjects they do not major in at university. She emphasized that unlike other professions, teaching in areas outside one's expertise can undermine the quality of education, as educators may lack the necessary depth of knowledge. Now, Shanika made those remarks during the ongoing consultation on teaching professions regulations in Enana. Let's take a listen.
I'll come first because the council produced the quality of teachers Namibia is seeking to have but not only Namibia, but also across the regions or across the globe. We are not training only for Namibia, but we want to train for the world. That's why we are saying we want to put standards, and this standard should meet the standard that of the region SADC and the standard that of the whole world, so that you can become employable wherever you find yourself, in Africa or elsewhere, in the region or elsewhere. That is what we need to understand. Now, secondly, the misalignment of subjects. And I want to take off the head of the steering committee to say, in my capacity now as a Secretary General of NANTU, I want to discourage you as teachers to stop teaching subjects you are not qualified to teach. To stop teaching subjects you are not qualified to teach. It is not only to obey the instruction from your supervisor, but it's equally disservicing the Namibian child in providing skills that you are not qualified or trained to provide. You are actually doing it wrong by law. You have never seen a dentist in a general practice. We have also not seen a general practitioner in a room of a dentist or a specialized doctor. This is what we are trying to do with this bill. We are trying to align ourselves to the level and the skills that you are qualified to train or that you are qualified to teach. Hence these regulations. That's why I'm saying you have not seen a general practitioner in a practitioner of a dentist and not vice versa. So we want you, if you are an English teacher, we want to see you in an English classroom. Now, if the requirements say you need to have a degree, that is what we want to see. But keep in mind, we are saying, we don't want to train for Namibia. We want to be where the rest of the world is teaching profession. That's why you see, we are bombarded now as a country with qualified unemployed teachers because we have no one to take them, because they only meet the standard of Namibia. They don't go thrown away. But we have seen in the past, when we did not have mathematics, science teachers, who were the teachers in our classroom? They are colleagues from Nigeria, and the colleagues from Ghana, and the colleagues from Zimbabwe. Simply because their education is regulated, there are standards, and their standard is that of the standard of the Namibian country that we want. So we should see this in a positive way, that this is the aim. Otherwise, we could have not said with qualified unemployed, but we could have said, when whichever country needs teachers, we could deploy them to that country. Now, your condition of employment will remain with your parent institution, which is the Ministry of Education, or parent employer. So, infrastructures, allocation of subjects, allocation of your time, where hours of work, that's your employer, which is the ministry, will determine. But like that, if I have said, that these two will work together, because even the council would not want to subject a highly professionally qualified person in a classroom, in a shack that we call a classroom. He won't be, the employer will be compelled to say, I'm giving you Lloyd Shanika, he's qualified, he's highly qualified, he's a qualified English teacher or mathematics teacher, but these are the necessary tools that this teacher needs to perform. As a present moment, colleagues, we are not refusing as a union, that in the past, I'm sorry to say that, but I'm trying to put off my head as well. We have not signed the performance agreement with the government through the ministry, simply because there are no tools of measuring. There are no key indicators. They are not clear because our classrooms, access, equity is not distributed fairly. Now, I want to agree with you that, yes, of course, these are the status quo that we want to change. To say, if you want to perform, if you want our teachers to perform, this is the nature of the classroom. that he or she should operate from. These are the necessary tools that he or she will need to give you the best result as you desire, as an employer. So these are the issues. I think the issues of subject infrastructures, it is not that we should not debate, but we are taking note to say, in as much as you want these changes in the profession, they are two sides of the coin. We also need to make sure that things are all in compliance and we are working in a very conducive environment. Like the doctors, you have not seen, if a doctor wants to operate on you and there are not necessary equipment, he will tell you, come back some other time because I don't have the equipment. He will not take a chance. So, this is also our time to say, we want to be treated fairly, just like any other profession. We are, it's long overdue, we are the mothers of all the professions, but we are not regarded as a profession. We are subject to different conditions of employment, we are subject to criticism. Yes, of course, we accept the positive criticism, but things must just be aligned with other professions. I think I've clarified that, but we take note of the issues of disability. It's long overdue. The bill also, we were just whispering to say, even this draft one, we're supposed to make provision for them to be able to follow and to read in Braille. But we highly take note of that. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. And there you had it from Loida Shanika, Secretary General of the Namibia National Teachers Union, also just sharing her contributions and opinions at the ongoing teaching profession regulations in Enana. Now, we are joined in studio by Peterson Nyonanye. Yes, I said it right. Right, Peterson?
Yes.
Okay. Yes. And he is a qualified teacher by profession, although not operating in that line directly right now, but he is. Now, good afternoon, Nyonanye. It's a pleasure to have you right here on the Reading News Analysis.
Thank you for having me, Ms. Happy.
Mm-hmm. Now, yes. Of course, we're talking about the Ministry of Education, or MASEC to just abbreviate it, conducting nationwide consultations on the Teaching Professions Bill and its regulations. Now, Peterson, one very first question that came to my mind when I read this, I just want to be honest, and I think other people might have same sentiments with me. I thought to myself, wait, I know that they are conducting nationwide consultations, but my thought way, are they going to be implemented? Are what the people going to bring on the table? And of course, I do know that not all of them, but are they going to be some that are really going to be implemented? What do you think?
Yes, I think it's very good that we have a professional bill, and these consultations are also very important because we are consulting frameworks as well as participants around the education sector and those that are involved, all the stakeholders, the teachers, the principals, and the parents, and all various sectors, which is very important because we need to hear from these individuals who are involved professionally.
Absolutely.
And are interacting with the profession on a regular basis.
Mm. Now,
yes.
Yeah. Peterson, let's get into also discussions about salary increment and salary scale. Loida Shanika rightfully said that, they are the mother body of all the professions. You know, to actually go somewhere, you have to go through a teacher. But then again, you do get that those other professions get paid really good. And the teachers, I almost feel like they're just kind of like average.
Yes. When you look at the payments, to be fair, I think it would be best if we had good standards for all the teachers, like especially when it comes to classroom, it comes to school systems, and it comes to teaching. If we had efficient working places, I don't think the salary would have been an issue.
Mm-mm.
But however, we also need to consult the economic statuses of the country. We need to consult the needs, inflation, economy-wise. We need to speak economy to profession. So salary increment in this economy is needed. We are already looking at a high sector of unemployment.
Mm-hmm.
So there is need for salary increment, or at least better improve the institutionalized facilities for teachers to have better working conditions.
Mm.
And then we can deviate away a bit from salary increment.
Yeah,
but now the teachers are in suffering, And still the salary is not accommodating the economic status of the country at the moment.
I hear you. What about the teacher ratio, teacher to learner ratio? Is it something that perhaps should, do you think should be discussed in part of this discussions on regulations?
Yes. I think the ministry did a great job by releasing the strategic plan or the strategic report. It's on the website of the Ministry of Education, and they really outlined all the teachers' ratios in all regions collectively. But yeah, teacher ratio, teacher to learner ratio is very important to speak about. It's something that is very vital because we need to see how we can accommodate to make sure that teaching is effective and ongoing in the classroom. And it's really, really a pivotal point of discussion because currently now the government schools are struggling with the teacher to learner ratio, where we have quite a number of learners than the teachers that are available. So we have classrooms that are overcrowded and so on, especially when it comes to the entry levels of primary school and high schools. It's quite a huge challenge, but going onwards as the grades proceed, it becomes better and better. But however, it's something that still needs to be discussed in regards to the teaching bit as well. That's very important.
Yeah. Now, something that was also discussed or is being discussed nationwide as they are conducting these consultations is that the ministry desires to have a regulative body that regulates the teachers, more like, for instance, the health profession, nurses and paramedics and doctors. They have a health professions council, HPCNA, that regulates them and, of course, looks at their conduct. And then they pay an annual fee on this. And should any actually nurse or any doctor or any healthcare professional fall short of this regulations that have been put in place, they're then held accountable, you know. What do you think about that? Is it something that is perhaps welcomed or something that a lot of teachers are perhaps not really into?
100%. I totally agree with the bill. Nurses have a professional registration council, so teachers do need a professional registration council. But however, the real question is, are we ready for the bill? I understand it's still in something that is still in process and still in doing. We are still busy with the drafting. We are still consulting countrywide, and we are still trying to get support from all different types of federation and the teaching regulatory authorities, from also international support. And also we are trying to align it with the existing national legislation, which is the Basic Education Act of 2020, which provides already a solution or a way forward, a paved way forward to say that we need to start accrediting and also we need to start registering schools, which means if the schools are formally registered, then we also need to make sure that those that work within that space are also formally registered and formally licensed as well.
Peterson, go ahead.
Yes, additionally, and we must also, like, when it comes to the finalization of the bill being passed, which they are already doing is consultation, which I think that is a great idea for me, that we are busy with consultations and we are busy collecting all the relevant stakeholders for us to know, to hear from them what are their needs, what are their ideas, because change is very not easy. Change can, it's also resistible. So it's, I am for it, but the question is, are we ready? And if I'm ready to answer that question regarding, are we ready, Ms. Happy, can I continue or?
Of course. Another? Yes, please.
Yes. Because if we are ready, we are not ready. I'm saying we are not ready.
Yeah.
The bill is a good idea, but we are not ready. Because at the end of the day, it's not only about the frameworks. It's not only about the writing. It's not only about the licensing. It's not only about that. It includes various factors. When we are speaking, we have institutional capacity in means of classrooms, in means of teaching? Are our teachers capacitated? Do we have the necessary resources? Do we have the necessary political will and the stakeholder support? And is our system like stabilized? Is our system having a proper stability? We're already having challenges with the ICT in terms of technology. We can't move on to technology. We can't speak about technology, or we can't speak about technology while certain schools don't even have formal electrical lines yet or proper telephone lines yet. And I just think that's a question that we have to ask ourselves. The bill is perfectly fine. It's perfectly good. But are we ready? Do we have all the necessary resources needed for us to make sure that that bill protects a child, protects every Namibian citizen, protects the teachers, protects the parents, protects all the stakeholders that are involved in the education sector? And currently now, the teachers also need to be protected.
Yeah.
Are we having proper support in terms of disarmament? We're currently facing violence in the schools in terms of kids bringing knives to schools. In the health regulation as well, kids are bringing vaping to school. That bill, how does it make sure that before we even have the bill passed on, how do we make sure that vapes will no longer be a challenge in schools? Fights will no longer be in schools. Will we have proper peace building education in schools? Will we have disarmament education in schools? Will we have ethics in schools? Will we have civil sense society in schools for us to make sure that we are protected so we don't encounter? And have we considered also the social stability or the environmental stabilities of where children come from?
Yeah.
Have we consulted the relevant environmental challenges that bring these certain behaviors to school? I think that we must do first ground, really, really on root, grassroots ground research for us to make sure that when we are on side with this bill, we have everything in order.
I absolutely agree with you. What are some of, but where we are the, what are some of the stuff, some of the regulations that perhaps, common ones that we normally hear that you would, personally want done away, with this, bill? Cause I'm certain that it's going to be amendments and of course removing some that are perhaps just outdated and not really speaking to the current status quo right now.
And currently they've released the alternative for corporal punishment. And it has, a few points or few sections, because, I don't think they really did a deep analysis on school environments. I think, the alternatives for corporal punishment should be based on the school's own disciplinary system, and the ministry should not decide really that all the schools will fit certain alternatives. Because now what they did is that they put up alternatives, but I think each school has their own systems and behavior changes. It's not certain. So there's no way you can say we have these certain alternatives and it's permanent, because as years go by, trends in behavior changes and society also changes. So things still need to change. So the best I could believe, because we can't use corporal punishment, but I believe the schools should start establishing their own form of alternatives to corporal punishment
in
their school regulatory systems or disciplinary systems. And also, I believe we need to start more social programs in the schools.
Absolutely.
Because, yes, we are moving into an era where we talk about climate change, we are talking about finances, we are talking about economies, but we really don't have social programs in schools. And also one thing that I advocate for literally before even starting this bill, we need to derive away from the idea of a teacher teaching two subjects. I don't like that every teacher is given two specializations, which is good advantage. But let's stick into having where, especially when it comes to secondary phase, where a teacher only teaches one that they specialize in. I think that is more practical, where we have one teacher for this certain subject only. And I think that is good. And before we even get that bill, that's where we can really say that, yes, we have one head of subject knowledge, highly professional from the grounds onwards.
Yeah.
You understand what I mean?
I
and also we have issues already with arts. Arts are in curriculum, they're in papers, but they are never implemented.
They are impractical.
Physical education as well. We have a syllabus, which is very, I don't even know who drafted that syllabus, very not competent syllabus, highly, very useless, to be honest. That's the best word I can use for it. We also have it, but it's not impractical. So we are jumping, I feel we are jumping the gun first. We need to resolve what we else have first before we start passing on the bill. Because once we pass on the bill and these things, practicalities or issues are not solved on the ground, then the teacher automatically does not become protected.
Exactly. Now, you know,
then the bill only supports certain individuals.
Two things I still want us to discuss. One is, you know, when I actually got to understand, and I'm a very firm advocate of mother tongue language. I advocate for mother tongue language, but when we have our grade ones up to grade three being taught in a mother tongue language, I that kind of like doesn't really sit well with me, you know. How do then the kids catch up in the long run? I mean, we're talking about English being our official a mode of communication, and yet you get a child being taught in Oshikwanyama in grade one up until grade three. When do they really get the understanding and the basics to be able to articulate themselves and understand well the language of English? And I think maybe that's one of the reasons why English is not doing so well. What is your take on that? I mean, you are qualified in that aspect. Perhaps you give better reasoning to it. What do you say, Peterson?
Miss Happy, I'm happy that a child would be learning their ethnical language or tribal language or actually their cultural language from the beginning. That is for me excellently well. It has been 100 years.
Yeah.
So we need to start shifting away from the term victimization to start actually doing actual change.
Okay.
Yes, colonialism had a huge influence and impact in regards to our culture, tradition, and all that, and languages and so on. We didn't have space to write, but it has been 100 years. I believe, yes, English is good. But research also shows for in order for a child to thrive, especially when it comes to numerical concepts, for you to pass properly to say that, yes, I have passed my math properly. Math is highly linked to language, like to your birthright language, if you understand what I mean. I forgot the term to use. But yes, most of the world or genius mathematicians, they are taught in their own languages. They are all taught in their own mother tongue. Sorry, that's the language I'm looking for.
Okay.
They are taught in their own mother tongue. So math is highly linked to mother tongue. So yes, to grasp the concept of English, yes, it takes a while. It takes time because this is something that is being introduced to them because they never had it in their household. When will we start producing biology books that are made in Oshiwambo or in Kwekwekovap, or when are we starting to have mathematic textbook? It has been over 100 years. We need to start producing our own books and our own writing. When will we start having history that is actually written by the perspective of those people before us? Those why don't we have history that is written by the people? By our own society, society views and perspectives. And I understand that is a very big thing now to deal with, especially when it comes to the writing, its consent, its registration. It's also, history is not perfect. People have opinions, but we need to also start moving on, starting to develop things for ourselves. I spoke to one of the greatest, not greatest, but oldest teachers in the teaching instructions or medium. And he told me that we actually have more of answers, but less of the questions. And I think as teachers, we need to start making more questions in society. We need to start moving with more questions rather than more answers, because there is still a lot to be addressed. And I'm very happy that kids are learning with their languages. I'm totally for it.
Okay.
The one must because that's where you really ground yourself and find yourself. It's in your mother tongue, and that's how you can understand the world and actually perceive the world and actually thrive in the world, because you get to learn and you get to understand it from your side of perspective without any influence of foreign or colonial language.
Yeah, Peterson, thank you so much for that. Moving on to the other question that I wanted to pose to you. Last year we saw a teacher that was dismissed for administering, I want to use that word, corporal punishment to one of the learners. The story is not so very clear because two sides are saying this. So the one side is saying this and the other one. Now, what about over-centralization of power, perhaps where the ministry has obviously a lot of power, and for some it's the saying is that without proper checks and balances, in other words, for instance, unilateral power to dismiss or appoint teachers without due process, you know, as that teacher was actually dismissed, there was a lot of outcry from the Namibian people to say pardon him and reinstate him, but of course that didn't happen as such. Do you think perhaps the bill and its regulations should incorporate some of the things to some of these procedures on how such situations should be handled, or maybe how the public also views certain things to be minor and some things that the ministry obviously maybe that we deem to be minor as actually considered as major? What's your take on that?
Yes, we are looking at the legal framework as well. So yes, those aspects need to be considered. And that's why I have alluded earlier that I like the fact that they're doing a consultation. And that is also the questions that must be put forward for us to actually address. And yes, in society has different views and perspectives. And also that's why I alluded earlier in regards to corporal punishment. There are certain aspects that are considered, like we need to hear from the societies as well. Mm. How do they view it and how do they see it? How do they understand it? We need to do more of grassroots research work, because we have to include all stakeholders and understand. That's why I'm saying we need to also try to understand the school's own disciplinary system. How can we make sure that that is sitting well with the legal frameworks that are already established? It's, again, a consultation agenda. But, yes, we do need to look into it. We do need to understand what is corporal punishment. We also need to look back at customary laws as well, because we are more driven to influence implementation without consulting our customary laws as well. What does our traditional authority say? How do they regulate? What is the society in that aspect when it regards to this issue for this teacher to handle it this way?
Yeah.
How do the traditional authority see it and things like that?
Mm-hmm.
I think we rushed too hard on Western approval, and also we rushed too hard to get so much validation, but we forgot our basic grounds and basic regulation. One of the history books that was written said the influence of colonialism, the reason why colonizers came into the countries is because we didn't know how to govern ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's where we failed, because we had our own governing system.
Mm-hmm.
We knew what is peace before. We knew what is harm. So we just need to go back and start doing a consultation to also our local authorities, our traditional authorities, our parenting. How does parenting look like in a different household in regards into tribal? Because like the way the customs of each tribe differ, they raise their kids in a certain way. Understand them. How do you raise their kids? So you can better understand this teacher to say that, no, so this is how you were raised, or you are from this certain ethnicity, or how is your customary law looking like, or how is this household looks like? You understand what I mean?
Absolutely.
So to say that, yes. But however, profession is just a profession.
Mm-hmm.
There is laws that you need to abide yourself to, and I think that should be very considered. But we need more information. Mm-hmm. We need more questions. We need more of grassroots research on the ground so we can formally address these issues.
Peterson Nyonanye, I absolutely appreciate your contributions with us right here on the Reader News Analysis. You really contribute in such a way that you get a person thinking, you know, and that's the purpose and the aim of on the Reader News Analysis. So I really appreciate you making time for us right here.
Yes, thank you so much for having me.
Okay, sure. More to this engagement in the future.
Bye. Thank you.
Bye.
And of course, that's Peterson Nyonange. And as I said, he is, as I alluded earlier, that he is a qualified teacher by profession. Now, our studio line is open at 083-288-401. Eastern number in studio. And I saw that, say that again slowly. 083-288-401. Eastern number in studio. Please come through your opinions and contributions right here on the Radar News Analysis. We would like to hear from you as well.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura. And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before. Mm. It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past. Mm. And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Lipura nenge lo wapumbwa eva tere ulikoni maondo toto ingida ashike kapeno nweku tete okoye ekukurile. Oshafa fana nongeshe faili unehola mo ihoe kike kovano ile koshuana. Onongeshe faa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi tota njuka. Okupitira oipindi konu konda doi nawa. Mune uto otukwetira o special angeza shake ngeshe faa omarudi dayo loka. Okone ushendi fenawa nokumona oijabwiri nawa. Ninge pata fanona monika ko Eagle FM. Onora esatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali. Ileko derewa mura hetatu natu bali o hetatu watatu oma filane Eagle FM.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura. And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before. Mm. It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past. Mm. And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back. And now we tell you what's making headlines in terms of economic indicators. And thereafter, you can expect some international news and news beyond the borders of Namibia. Now, $1 today is equals to 17 Namibian dollars and 29 cents. €1 is equals to 20 Namibian dollars and 29 cents. £1 sterling is equals to 23 Namibian dollars and 23 cents. $1 Australian dollar is equals to 11 Namibian dollar and 42 cents. £1 Swiss franc is equals to 21 Namibian dollars and 68 cents, and £1 Botswana pula is equals to 1 Namibian dollar and 22 cents. Now moving on to trading economics. The Indian government recorded a budget deficit of 5.98 trillion in the first 5 months of the 2026 fiscal year, widened from 4.35 trillion deficit in the corresponding period of the previous year. Now, while the funding gap corresponded to less than 40% of the deficit budgeted for this year, the results extended the momentum of a less prudential backdrop to the government's budget, as growth concerns and threats of aggressive sanctions by the US drove the Indian government to increase economic support in the period. Industrial production in Macedonia fell 3.5% year-on-year in August 2025, marking the first decline in 6 months and reversing a 4.1% gain in the previous month. Now, output tumbled in electricity, gas, steam and air conditioning supply at -26.8% versus -7.5% in July. Meanwhile, Iceland's seasonally adjusted unemployment rate surged to 5.7% in August 2025 from an upwardly revised 4.1% in the prior month. Now, this was the highest reading since June 2021, as the number of unemployed climbed by 4,200 to 13,700. Among them, 9,500 were men and 4,100 were women. Now, the youth unemployment rate, which measures job seekers between 16 and 24 years old, jumped to 14% from 5.9% in July. Meanwhile, unemployment increased by 1,600 from the previous month, totaling 225,600, and the labor force rose by 5,800 to 239,300. Producer prices in Sri Lanka declined 0.4% year-on-year in August 2025, following a downwardly revised 0.3% fall in July. This marks the second consecutive month of producer deflation, driven by continued decreases in prices for agricultural products. That was mainly due to lower cost of non-perennial crops and animal production. Deflation also persisted in electricity, gas, steam, and air conditioning supply, though at a much softer pace. Now, meanwhile, price growth in manufacturing slowed to 0.7% from 1.1%, primarily due to sharp declines in prices for coke and refined petroleum products. And that's what we had for you today in terms of economic indicators. We pause right here now, take a trip to the marketplace. When we return, we'll be telling you what's making headlines. Now, news beyond the borders. And remember, you can also call in studio and partake in the news analysis. 083-288-401 is the number in studio.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of failure.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Ipurane ngeleo wapumbwa Eva Tere ulikoni maondu tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweku tete okoye ekukurile. Oshafa fana nongeshefa ili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshuwana. Kono ngeshefa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi tota njuka. Okupitira oipindi konu konda doi inawa. Nune uto otukupitira o special ngezashake ngeshefa omarudi dayo loka. Okone ushendife nawa nukumona oijabu ili nawa. Ninge pata fano na Monica ko Eagle FM onora isafimwe mbali heali nola natu. Heali bali no heali ileko derewa mura hetatu natu bali o hetatu watatu o mafilane Eagle FM the
eye. Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of failure.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back. Now you can brace yourself for news beyond the borders of Namibia. We're setting off in South Africa, where Eskom's miraculous turnaround as load shedding plummets by 82% in 2025. Let's take a listen.
ESCOM has staged what's been called the miraculous turnaround in 2025. The Council for Scientific and Industrial Research says South Africa experienced a sharp reduction in load shedding during the first half of this year. It says the amount of electricity shed fell by 82% compared with the same period in 2024. ESCOM has in recent times been facing a litany of challenges. For more on this, let's talk to CSIR Principal Researcher Sipho Mdluli. It's good to have you. Thanks very much for joining us, Sipho.
Good morning to you, Lience. Good morning to your viewers as well.
So CSIR Power Generation has shown that ESCOM staged this miraculous turnaround, but let's talk about the primary drivers behind these developments.
Yes, yeah, it's a massive reduction, 82%. Lience, there are a number of factors that are behind this. There's three principal factors, and let me just take you through them. The first one is the improvement in the ESCOM power plant performance. There's a parameter called energy availability factor. The energy availability factor measures the theoretical maximum energy that can be generated by the ESCOM fleet when available, when the power plants are not on plant maintenance or unplanned maintenances. The energy availability factor improved by 1% in the first half of this year to reach an average of 58% compared to the 57% that was reached in the first half of 2024. Some people might think that 1% is a small improvement, but I want to put it to your viewers that a 1% improvement on the energy availability factor is a massive achievement. Because we're talking about a 1% of a system that has installed capacity of over 47,000 megawatts dispatchable generation resources. So this improvement basically means that we can add power the moment we improve the energy availability. Because the alternative is to just procure new dispatchable generation resources, and that takes a long time, behind more than 5 years. In the short-term horizon, the energy availability factor is the single biggest levers that we can actually work on to add dispatchable generation capacity. This is power that can produce electricity over a 24-hour period. The second lever here is new generation capacity that's been brought online. ESCOM once again added 720 megawatts of dispatchable baseload power plants. So this is due to the commissioning of the Kusile Unit 6. So that unit came online and started producing power as early as June. From the REACT-EP program, there's been a number of additions. We've added 364 megawatt hours of wind generation resources, and we've also added 100 megawatts of a CSP power plant. The last lever that actually contributed to this massive reduction is the growth that we continue to see in embedded solar PV installation. Embedded solar PV installation increased by approximately 1,400 megawatts in the first half of 2025 to bring it to a total of 6,800 megawatts of installed embedded solar PV in the first half of 2025 compared to the 5,400 megawatts. So all these three factors.
Certainly good news. It's a good news story to tell. Sorry for interrupting you, Sipho. I'm just watching the time. Sure. And I know it's not on our side. We unfortunately need to get out the program early these days. But in terms of diesel, I want to focus on the diesel issue because that's the good news story to tell. But I want to look on the flip side here because there's one or two issues that I suppose we need to question. ESCOM's generation jumped from about 7% in the first half of 2024 to 12% in the same period. This is the use of diesel, and obviously this is a worrying dependency, and we are seeing that this is, I suppose, some are reading it as an ESCOM hidden diesel subsidy. What do you think about that?
Well, the diesel generator is actually needed. I just want to correct you, Leanne. The diesel utilization, it didn't really double. Diesel utilization increased from 13% to reach 18% in the first half of 2024 compared to 2025. You know, so these generation resources are needed in order to stabilize the grid. And when you look at what actually happened in the first half of this year, the Kubik unit was taken out for plant maintenances. So that basically means that in order to mitigate against load shedding, all generation resources that are available in our online need to come up and meet the load. That also includes the diesel generators. Just basically, cover the energy that would have been produced by the Kubik unit that went down on the 1st of March.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, a Canadian envoy has applauded Zambia's maize harvest and storage infrastructure.
Cedar sheds dotted across the country stand out as evidence of the cordial relations between Zambia and Canada over the years. These sheds in Chipata are some of the storage facilities reportedly constructed in the 1980s by the Canadian International Development Agency, CIDA. Agriculture Minister Ruben Mtolo and Canadian High Commissioner to Zambia, Emery Benz, have toured CIDA sheds in Chipata to appreciate decades of friendship between the two countries.
In Zambia, these sheds are found across the entire nation. The famous CIDA sheds from the Canadian International Development Agency. This is the relationship that Zambia has with Canada. And we don't take this lightly. This is a very expensive structure to construct. And to think that about 40 years ago, Zambia and Canada could sit and look into the future.
They're an excellent example of the long-standing partnership that Canada has had with Zambia. Mm. They're also a very shining example of the quality of our relationship.
Absolutely.
And the quality of Canadian business activity in Zambia. Mm. Congratulations on this year being a bumper crop year for maize.
Thank you.
That's excellent. And the fact that these sheds are allowing you to then be able to export products as well only increases the strength of your economy, and as you say, food security here in Zambia.
The Agriculture Minister is happy that both nations continue to be strategic partners and remain committed to fostering economic growth.
This is the type of relationship Zambia requires. Not only Zambia, but developing countries. Let's look into the future. A country that is food secure is socially secure.
Built over 40 years ago, CIDA sheds have undoubtedly stood the test of time and remain strong while serving their purpose, particularly as a storage for food reserves. I am Nicholas Mare reporting in Chipata.
Meanwhile, Dalo Airlines in Rwanda has launched a new route to Luanda, to Uganda.
Today we flew in the 737-400 with a seating capacity of 140 passengers and a tonnage of 6 tons. That's 6,000 kilos on the belly. So it can carry quite a good chunk of cargo into Entebbe.
So this is the flight between Nairobi and Entebbe, which is 3 times a week, every Monday, Wednesday and Friday, a departure of 4 p.m. from Nairobi and 7:30 p.m. from Entebbe. Fanjet Express is a fully owned Kenyan airline. Started off in 2013. We are certificated by the Kenya Civil Aviation Authority. So we are a charter operator as well as a scheduled flight operator.
As Entebbe International Airport, we commit ourselves to ensure that standards are met, to ensure that traffic is well managed and passengers have a very brilliant experience. So we thank Dalo Airlines for coming on board. We see economic activity growing in Entebbe, and we see passenger numbers increasing in Entebbe. So we look forward, as Uganda Civil Aviation Authority, the operator of Entebbe International Airport, in ensuring that this airline lives its success as long as we exist. So we thank the President of Uganda, we thank the management of Civil Aviation Authority, and we thank Dalo Airlines for considering Uganda as a destination.
Just a correction on that. Dalo Airlines is a Kenyan-based carrier that has now launched a new route to Uganda, becoming the 18th scheduled operator. The airline will run on 3 weekly flights from Entebbe to Nairobi every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Now, more in other news, Malawi's new leadership faces economic stabilization challenge.
Malawi's elections may have centered around a number of issues plaguing the country, but growing the stagnating economy remained the number one issue. The increase in the cost of living is piling on economic hardship for many Malawians, and a series of natural disasters have also played a negative role. Economists estimate that more than 70% of Malawians live below the World Bank's latest international poverty line of $3 per person per day, and it's a figure many want to see change.
We can say that Malawi was better off under Peter Mutharika and the Democratic Progressive Party than we are now. If you go to the village, the sentiments are the same. If you go in town, the sentiments are the same. So we are really in the dire straits, and we need to make sure that we get another lane which we can follow if we are to be compensated with our worries and the depression that we have suffered economically.
With a chronic shortage of foreign currency in the country, Malawi recently banned imports in order to maintain its reserves and boost the local manufacturing sector. That, though, has done very little to assist some businesses who rely on cross-border trade and need access to a steady flow of foreign currency to operate sustainably.
The business of selling cars has been very difficult this year because of shortage of forex at the banks. All these cars you see here, we bought them using foreign currency from the black market. Each time we went to the bank, there was no forex. We should not buy it from the black market.
For now, the high inflation levels have seen the prices of many goods skyrocket and largely become unaffordable to many Malawians. And it's a pressing issue that needs urgent attention. That was Andrews, CGTN.
Kenya's food waste crisis revealed in new report.
A semi-arid town situated about 600 kilometers from Kenya's capital, Nairobi. As evening falls, traders hustle to sell their goods. Though some can't help but be concerned, they haven't made enough sales and now face the risk of their goods spoiling amid lodwar scorching temperatures. The items are perishable and have already been here for days.
I have only sold items that are worth less than a dollar since morning, and I have a lot of needs.
Her worry is that the market lacks cooling facilities for proper storage, and she fears she could suffer a huge loss.
We really need help as traders here. We are really suffering. The cost of living is quite high, yet we are not getting much from our goods.
This is the paradox. While families go to bed hungry, food spoils just a few steps from the dinner table.
You see some of those markets, a lot of potatoes just dumped there. So you see it, but then it's not like one of those priorities that you say, what does this mean for the issues around food security in our country? How many more people can we feed with this food that is actually being wasted here? What kind of opportunities does this present? We keep talking about jobs. What are the hidden opportunities in this problem?
Chomba is one of the authors of a new report by the World Resources Institute Africa, the Food and Land Use Coalition Kenya, and Jomo Kenyatta University of Agriculture and Technology that reveals the shocking losses. 36% of maize never reaches the consumer. 56% of fruits perish along the value chain. 34% of fish never make it to market, and 23% of potatoes spoil before they can be eaten. the report paints a picture of a nation where millions go hungry while thousands of traders incur insurmountable losses as food is wasted.
When the rains come and the maize is not properly dried, that farmer knows very well the amount of losses they are going to incur in terms of the money they put into that, the money they were expecting from the sales. They can see the losses. And of course, when it comes to also the businesses, the traders that are dealing with it, sometimes the trader has actually bought already from the farmer, yeah, and they are bringing it to the market, and then they cannot be able to sell it.
Mwaka specific?
Okay, actually, maybe.
Elizabeth Odinga recounts that on several occasions, she has been compelled to discard a portion of her produce because of poor handling and transportation from the farm where she sourced it.
It
ends up being a complete loss. For example, if I buy produce from a farmer and the delivery vehicle gets delayed, the goods spoil during transportation.
For the ordinary Kenyan, these losses mean higher food prices. For farmers and traders, it means lost income. For the government, it means wasted resources invested in agriculture. The new report concludes that Kenya could make significant progress in tackling food insecurity by focusing on preserving the food it already produces. Enoch Sikolia, CGTN.
Nigeria's new 20% expert tax sparks investment concerns.
For nearly 10 years, Cameroonian Cecil Mambo has run a trade business in Nigeria, helping to strengthen commerce across Africa. But a new tax law is threatening her business. Under the regime, she would surrender up to 20% of her earnings, almost triple the entry-level pay-as-you-earn rate of 7%. For her, the changes come with a heavy cost.
We are already paying so much taxes. We are paying for quota of expatriate because in our company we have other expatriates working for us, and I'm an expatriate. We pay quota every 2 years, and it's not a small amount. I pay for resident permit $2,000 every year. It's quite a lot.
The tax hike is embedded in Nigeria's 2025 Tax Act, which comes into force in January 2026. It replaces older regulations, expands the tax net, and is expected to generate trillions of naira in additional revenue.
The idea of the reform is one, to enhance revenue generation, to improve the quality of tax administration in Nigeria, to improve the level of compliance to tax payment, to be able to simplify the tax process and make Nigerians begin to see the impact and benefits of paying tax. If you are a Nigerian and you are making money in Nigeria, it's 10%. So for foreigners, 20% is not so much money compared to the kind of revenue they earn here.
Nigeria is pushing to strengthen its role as a continental trade hub under AFCFTA. Expatriates bring vital skills and capital, but business owners argue that raising taxes could damage investor confidence.
We are in an era where we are trying to promote investments across Africa. It just seems to be more of a burden. How are we saying we are encouraging more investment in Nigeria, but at the same time, we are trying to increase taxes? So I feel there's a need to look into it again and see how best we can incentivize the people that are ready to do business here, because we are also creating employment here.
This tax reform comes at a time when Nigeria is under pressure to diversify its revenues away from oil. Many worry that without better infrastructure, simpler regulations, and stronger legal frameworks, the higher rates could fuel capital flight rather than attract the investment the government hopes for. The government says over several years, Nigeria has lost billions through exemptions and untaxed foreign income. Economists insist taxing expatriates is standard practice worldwide, and with a right business climate, it could even boost investors' confidence.
What promotes investment is creating an enabling environment for their businesses to thrive. If their businesses should thrive in Nigeria and they know they are going to earn enough revenue, they are willing and ready to comply. What scares them away is that porous business environment they continue to find themselves.
As the January rollout nears, debates over double taxation, investment incentives, and foreign confidence are intensifying. The government has yet to disclose its revenue targets, but for expatriates, the key question remains whether this is a financial burden or a step towards a more inclusive growth strategy. Kelechi Emekalam, CGTN Abuja, Nigeria.
Colombian president says Trump is complacent in a genocide.
There is nothing illegitimate about applying the consequences of the Rome Statute, whether in the United States or anywhere else. If Mr. Trump keeps being complicit in a genocide, as he is up to today, he deserves nothing but jail, and his army should not obey him.
No merece más sino la cárcel. Y su ejército no lo debe obedecer. Llegaba a San Antonio de Isa con Brasil. O el Tratado de Roma describe...
The Rome Statute defines crimes against humanity, war crimes, international crimes. Anyone of any nationality, judged by those tribunals, can be arrested by any country if they pass through. Then Netanyahu could be arrested in the United States.
Es capturable por cualquier país. Si pasa por allí.
And if they could arrest him, why don't they do it? Why do they disobey international law treaties?
Y si es capturable, ¿por qué no lo capturan? Porque desobedecen los tratados de derecho internacional.
Meanwhile, Donald Trump and Benjamin Netanyahu have agreed Gaza peaceful plan, peace plan.
President Trump has declared that peace in the Middle East is beyond very close as he presented a new plan to end the war in Gaza in the presence of the Israeli Prime Minister. Benjamin Netanyahu said he supported the scheme, with both men saying Hamas must also do so, or Israel would finish its offensive. Hamas says it's studying the plan, which demands it disarms and stops governing Gaza, and this may be hard to accept. The deal envisages governance being taken up by a committee of Palestinian technocrats, supervised by an international body headed by Mr. Trump, and later a possible Palestinian state. Eight Arab and Muslim nations have also jointly welcomed the proposal, as has Britain, France, Italy, and the European Union. Our North America correspondent, Peter Bowes, reports.
President Trump, are you confident, sir, there'll be peace in Gaza anytime soon?
I am. Very confident.
There was no hiding President Trump's excitement, a potential breakthrough in the long, elusive search for peace in Gaza.
So this is a big, big day, a beautiful day, potentially one of the great days ever in civilization.
I believe that today... we're taking a critical step towards both ending the war in Gaza and setting the stage for dramatically advancing peace in the Middle East. And I think beyond the Middle East, in very important Muslim countries.
Benjamin Netanyahu on board and seemingly equally optimistic. The two leaders said they'd agreed on a 20-point plan for a ceasefire, an exchange of hostages held by Hamas in return for Palestinian prisoners held by Israel, a staged Israeli withdrawal from Gaza, a transitional administration led by an international body, and the disarmament of Hamas. President Trump said it could herald a new chapter of security, peace, and prosperity for the entire region, possibly for eternity. The proposed transitional government in Gaza would be led by an international body called the Board of Peace, chaired by the U.S. president and with other global statesmen involved.
One of the people that wants to be on the board is the U.K. former Prime Minister Tony Blair, good man, very good man, and some others.
Sir Tony said the proposal was a bold and intelligent plan, which, if agreed, could end the war and bring immediate relief to Gaza. Benjamin Netanyahu said it would ensure that Gaza never again posed a threat to Israel. But the Prime Minister appeared to distance himself from some aspects of the plan, adding that Israel would retain security responsibility in Gaza after the war.
And with that, we have now come to the conclusion after this episode of On the Reading News Analysis. Do stay tuned for the Ankonana Dengue program with Loise Shimi. From Indafa, happy Juju. It is goodbye. Have yourself a wonderful day ahead.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of failure.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
So not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura menace.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura. And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before. It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Lipura nenge no wapumbwa eva tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweku tete opoe ekukulile. Oshafafa na nongeshefa ili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshiwala. Onongeshefa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi tota njuka. Okupitira oipindi konu konda doi inawa. Nune uto otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshefa omarudi kayo loka. Opone ushendife nawa nokumona oijabo ili nawa. Ninge pata fanona monika ko Eagle FM onora esatimwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali. Ileko berewa, mura hetatu natu, bali o hetatu watatu, o mafilane, Eagle FM, the eye.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of failure.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura menace.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura. And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
Eagle FM programming, or to listen to podcasts of previous broadcasts. Eagle FM, Namibia's number one talk radio station.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, and I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Simon, Don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral. Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Omutiha, with the Kirokaguna, I Matina, Omjo. Chicago Shafa, Nana, Longishifa, Yai, Shuita Moshiwana, I Moyao, Otaingo Samweni. Ana Geshifa, Ya Namibia, Omitomba Nawa, Omjika. Seithanina Omeaguro, Nirandi Toma, Yue, Yongeshifa, Yokupira, Mo, Eagle FM Media House. Gwe 20 Pimeha, Uka Kombanga Nina. Kara Omkashipareki, Wimopo, Yomo Programa Deto. Moambo, Lengera Selma, Kodaraheta Pimu. Datunda tu, Heri Hamanotano, Ondiaj. Eagle FM, the eye.
No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. Download the Eagle FM app to tune into live Eagle FM programming or to listen to podcasts of previous broadcasts. Eagle FM, Namibia's number one talk radio station.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number.